should introduce myself. Jim Johnston, former AAS governor, former chair of the Signal Processing Committee, former chair of the Audio Coding Committee for the AAS, former chair of the Multi-Channel Audio Committee of the AAS, AAS fellow, IEEE fellow, yada, 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 yada. There's one rule with this talk. If you got a question, ask it. Don't wait. Don't get buried. Stick up your hand and well, hey, wait a minute. What's that all about? Do it, really. This is an interactive discussion. This is not a lecture. I don't do lectures. So the first thing you need to remember here is the Shannon sampling theorem. How many people remember the Shannon sampling theorem? Basically, what it says is it says if you're trying to sample a baseband signal, you have to sample it at twice the bandwidth of the signal. Anything, yeah?
How does this relate to the Nyquist?
Right.
The Shannon sampling theorem is the Nyquist conjecture or the Nyquist criterion. Shannon proved it. Nyquist merely figured it out.
So they're equivalent? The same.
Well, the Shannon sampling theorem is part of the paper in the Shannon information theorem. But Shannon's the one who actually proved that the sampling theorem was correct.
And this is information theory.
In the process of inventing information theory. Harry Nyquist did not prove it, although it's clear he understood the whole proof. He just never really wrote a paper on it. This was back in the 1930s. It wasn't quite as organized as it was now. So it's the Nyquist criterion, Shannon sampling theorem, whatever you want to call it. The thing to remember is if you want to keep the baseband signal intact, you have to sample it twice the sampling rate. If you sample above half the sampling rate, what you will see is if you look up at the sampling rate, you'll see the entire signal reflected both ways around 1 times the sampling rate, 2 times the sampling rate ad infinitum. That's what a digital signal looks like. And I have a picture of that. Basically, all the way to the left is the sampling rate. The bottom scale is in terms of units of the sampling rate. The red.
What you want to sample, you mean?
What?
This is the one
that you're capturing. This is the first inversion, this is the first inverted image, first positive image, second, third, fourth, so on. And the thing you have to remember here is that if you change the sampling rate, you change the arrangement of these images. For instance, this gives you the rule. This is the whole rule. This is the key to all sampling rate converters. Don't leave anything but the original signal. And never let them overlap. We'll demonstrate something in a little while what happens when you overlap. You're welcome to stick your fingers and ears 2 seconds into it. This is why you don't do it. But never let anything overlap. Then you get aliases. And to explain what happens with an alias, say if I have a signal that has, say if the sampling rate's 48 kilohertz, so half the sampling rate's 24. If I have a signal, say, at 20 kilohertz, that means you're going to have a signal at 28 kilohertz, but that's going to fold back down. And if you do something, if you pick the right frequency, you can get a much lower frequency out than you put in. This does not lead to positive outcomes. If you do something like if you distort a signal, and Bob will show you this, let you listen to it later. If you take a signal and add, say, third harmonic, so the third harmonic comes in at 47 kilohertz, congratulations, you just made yourself a 1 kilohertz tone. So the first rule is do not alias. The second rule, as they said, see rule number one.
You had actually two on the first slide. Did we get to the second piece of the first slide?
Yeah.
Okay.
The first slide, what did I miss there?
There, the whole trick.
Do not overlap. It's the same rule. Do not overlap. And now what happens when you overlap? Well, sir, first I'm just going to show what happens. If you just throw out every other sample, if you want to connect 96, say, to 48, and you throw out every other sample, what happens? Well, that's what you had for the original. Now you notice everything is overlapped. You really don't want to listen to this kind of thing. What happens is you wind up taking the entire spectrum inverted, so the low frequencies are high frequencies are low, and you wind up just adding that to the original signal. And the chances of this sounding good.
Zero.
What?
Zero.
Well, you could probably, if you picked, say, a quarter of the sampling rate, it would work out. But nothing else. The chance, what?
Can you go into depth on this a little bit?
Sure. Okay, this is the original spectrum, and that's the first inverted spectrum.
The original spectrum is what you're trying to sample.
It's green. That's what you're trying to, and you're cutting down to half the sampling rate. So now this will be the new point where you alias about. So what happens is that signal stays in place. It still goes up to the old sampling rate, but this one slides down so that it overlaps it. Hmm. And as you can see, that makes things happen. And yeah, no, I heard somebody say no, and you're right. I made a very, very, very bad version of this just to make it obvious even in a small room. And there's some advice on this slide, you can tell. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to take this. This has now been downsampled by a factor of 4 with absolutely no filtering. And now I'm going to take these really nice speakers and I'm going to play that through it. I advise that you brace yourselves.
What? Brace aesthetically, not for volume.
Yes, no.
Okay. Good. Looks like you could make volume.
We can make volume, but we'd prefer not to.
Thank you.
That would be okay. Now, this is the original track. We'll just let this go for a minute. This is what it's supposed to sound like. Okay, now this is what it shouldn't sound like.
There's no correlation between right and left, it sounds like.
Well, there's lots of things. Here are a few. What? You hear the little birdies in that. This is why you don't do that. This is 44.1, so this is a quarter of 44. Do we need more, or should I stop?
So is that 11K right
now? So that's 11K.
Okay.
Well, it's 11K upsampled back to 44.1 with no filtering, showing why
okay. You
don't really want to do that. You understand?
Some people are saying between 96 and 48, for instance, since it's just an easy division, that the mathematics is simple as compared to, say, 80.
We'll get to that. The answer is yes and no. It's easier to program, but that doesn't mean that the math is actually any easier. And the same problem, it's the same problem in either case, filter out the image before you make it. And so that basically is the entire show. You don't have to... Okay. So what is it? Well, when do you use this? What is it for? You need to convert, say, 96 to 44 or whatever. You need to do anything that changes the sampling rate, obviously. But there's another reason you do sampling rate conversion. If you need to delay something by a fractional sample. And you might be surprised just how useful this can be sometimes if you're building particular kinds of products and so on. And what it amounts to is you upsample, if you wanted, say, delay by 2/3 of a sample, you upsample by 3, delay by 2 samples, and then downsample by 3. Of course, you actually don't actually do that. You just apply the proper filters, and you don't actually have to do all that. But the point that's how you can do fractional sample delay. So there's the two main reasons you would do this. I mean, one of them is delivery. The other one is processing. Yeah?
I had a project recently that had, in my mastering, 88.2 is coming in, and then 96 is coming in for the same piece.
Fun.
And we wanted to put it all into one pretty much thing.
Yeah.
So was it a problem that I took the 88.2s up to 96 and then processed them all at 96?
No. As long as you did a sample rate conversion when you moved it up, there's no problem.
I trusted Isotope to do that.
Okay, I Did you test isotope?
I didn't.
Oh, well, we can send you a file and you can convert it and we can look at it, but can't do that right.
That's pretty high. There's 64 bit.
Yeah, they do.
Okay. That's just because we tried some well-known sampling rate converters and some of them are immaculate and a couple of them are just basically just cover your mouth and wins. So as long as it's a good sampling rate converter, you're fine.
Appropriately. So what this stuff is under the hood potential problems as compared to,
this, I'm going to describe how you do it, and some people do it right, some people do it wrong, and there's a big issue with a lot of the sampling rate conversion and a lot of the A to Ds and D days, the ones that do oversampling. They use half-band filters, and explaining why that's a bad reason would require getting a Princeton mathematician, he used to be the head of the mathematics department at Bell Labs, to explain it, but would don't do that suffice? Okay, so why do you care? Well, you know why you care, I think. How many people don't know why you do sampling rate conversion? See, this is the problem. You can never guess your audience. So, you have to do things. You need to have some other fractional sample. And this one, okay, see this one here? You want to do nonlinear processing? You remember something. If you take a signal and you do nonlinear processing, you generate harmonics. If you generate harmonics above half the sampling rate, they're going to alias back down below half the sampling rate. A lot of compressors work at a speed and a degree of nonlinearity that they do that, and the word crunchy is probably too kind. And again, Bob has a wonderful live demo of this that you'll see in the second half, which explains why you don't, if you're going to do distortion, first you oversample, and you figure out what the polynomial representation of your distortion is, and you oversample by the highest order. And if I sound a little dogmatic about this, there is an implied or else after that statement. Because you get the wrong frequency in, and you can get surprises, like birdie, like having somebody hit a bell or a timpani or something like that and hear something go tweedle, tweedle, tweedle right at your ear canal resonance. These things tend to be kind of unpleasant. You can really do things wrong and you'd be surprised how little it manages to change the base frequency to change the alias components completely. So that is really an important thing that most people do not recognize. I won't name any common obnoxiously licensed production software that very often forgets it in some of its plugins. I saw that snicker over there. Yeah?
So a question about that. So basically what you're saying, if you're doing any significant nonlinear processing, which would mean pretty much any aggressive compression, you have to go to a much higher sample rate. You have to convert up when you do it. So typically what should they be going up to for modern...
That requires knowing the guts of everything. Sorry. So basically, you can figure if you look at the compressor, the compressor, if you will, the multiplication waveform in the linear domain the compressor has. If you look at that bandwidth, you take that bandwidth, add it to the bandwidth of your signal, you have to be above that.
Right.
But what that would be if you're talking about a hard limiter, that's basically infinity.
Yeah,
there are some things you just can't, there are some things you really shouldn't do. You should have some filtering, you should have some look ahead. There are things that can, there are things you really can't make work. And you can do it in analog because you don't get the aliasing. And if you remember, the first couple of digital compressors sounded really terrible because the first couple digital compressors did not ever do this. Now, the one thing you can do with a hard limit is you can just jam the limit once and then hold it. Then you don't get a problem, of course. You get a problem only on the attack. Yeah?
Is a possible solution to low-pass filter the audio so that when you do... No, because you're still going to create harmonics, right?
Yeah. It depends. There are places where that could work. It depends on the system, and you would have to know the total guts of the system and know the answer to that.
So just follow up with that. When you're doing a hard limit, if you were to sample rate up to some really high
rate frequency, it would get a lot better.
Do the hard limit come down? It won't look hard limited anymore, will it?
No.
So you haven't actually achieved anything. I mean,
well, the whole that makes the point that hard limiting, you know, if you look at a waveform, you know, there are waveforms you can express inside of, say, 1644 that don't actually represent anything you could actually physically capture. Yes. For instance, if you have one sample spike in 1644, you cannot record that because that has a flat bandwidth all the way to the Nyquist frequency. And you can't possibly record that unless you don't have an anti-alias filter. If you don't have an anti-alias filter, well, then the word stuff comes to mind. Yeah?
So does that mean that trying to do serious compression in real time is kind of doomed?
It means that you want to run up the sampling rate first.
But
that doesn't... It's not totally doomed. You can do serious compression. You just maybe upsample by 6 or 8 and do it on that level and then bring it back down. It will stay compressed. It just won't give you that hard limit.
Right, okay. So you have to take whatever you're going to squeeze out of the context of the DAW, process, upsample, process, downsample.
Well, some of the plugins modern day now actually do that. It's the good news. The bad news is some of them don't. And, you know, like that thing I just played, you know, stick that through a compressor. And that, by the way, is that track is interesting. It's a codec murderer and it's a compressor murderer. So it's track 11 of Ry Cooder's album Jazz. I recommend it to anybody that wants to beat on digital signal processing because it causes a lot of digital signal processing to go. Try it in HEAAC sometimes.
Oh, and by the way, some of those plugins that upsample internally are really only prepared for 40, 44, 48. If you actually run it 192, they end up doing really bad things. A small subset of them. Because they don't end up...
I believe you. Sorry, that's all I can tell you. I believe you. Because they sample up to 192, but if you have put 192 in... Surprise!
Yeah, their algorithm just doesn't happen.
I can see that happening. Have a seat if you'd like. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 seats. And two more here. You don't have to stand unless you want to. So that point is one of the most important things you have to remember. I keep saying this even though it's sort of tangential to sample rate conversion. Because how many people have run into that problem? You know, and so, you know, it's one of these things you can't necessarily track down. Where is that coming from? You don't know where it's coming from. You don't know why it's happening. So that's one of those things you have to be careful with. And things like soft clipping, if you put in a soft clipper, that's all well and good, but if you look at the polynomial of that soft clipper, it might be, third or fourth order. Better upsample by three or four. Or you're dead.
Could you repeat the name of that track, Ry Cooder?
It is out. It is the last track on the CD or album Jazz.
Okay, thanks.
The name of the track is We Shall Be Happy. There's actually 3 tracks on that album that are useful, which is track 2, track 5, and track 11. Funny, I know those off the top of my head. Hello?
Thank you.
You don't have to sit in the front. I told you you can sit in my office if you want.
Is this your place? Is this where you work?
Yeah.
You're unretired?
Yeah, this is my point of unretired. So anyhow, that's something that people miss a lot, but please bear it in mind. You're going to sit in the front?
Hey, you don't smell that bad.
Just wait. Okay, so this is the problem. You have samples coming in at some rate, you need samples coming out at some other rate, or you need a fractional sample delay. I repeat this a couple of times just to make the point. So what do you do? Well, suppose we want to upsample. Okay, we got to go from 44 to 88 or something like that. So what do? You add every other sample What do? You copy every other sample? You add every other sample zero? There, now you're at the right sampling rate, yes? What do you think? Well, yes, but what do you think? Since you have to average samples or something, because otherwise every other sample zero means you're really not having enough energy, you know, you're changing the energy of the signal there. So what do you do? But you have to have time, you have to have the right sampling, you have to address the frequency content. And this is where you can very simply demystify this stuff, because what happens? Well, let's look. I'm going to make the signal. This is basically a pink noise signal that's absolutely flat if you take it at the length. If you want a good pink noise generator that runs an octave, which Bob will tell you about, grab that. It makes nice pink noise. It's absolutely, you know, from 20 to 20K, it is absolutely exact in spectrum. It's actually pseudo-random noise, obviously. But the reason I make it is because that power spectrum is real easy to recognize, yes? Would you say? You know, so when I take that signal and I say, take it, I mean, this is made, the point is this was contrived so you get a really, really, really clean spectrum. But it works for pink noise if you need to use pink noise, and it doesn't have any DC in it because it's hard to convey infinite energy in a signal, you know? You're welcome to grab that script. It's in the deck, and you'll be able to get to it. But say that's at 44.1. We want to do 88.2. We put in zeros. We can double the samples, right? So let's see what happens when we put in a zero. Well, that's the signal. Notice every other sample now is zero. What is that? Notice something funny about that spectrum? That doesn't look so good, does it? But you notice that the lower half of it is still exactly right. That's important. Remember that. Because now what we're going to do is we're going to show what happens when you double the samples. Now notice every one of those peaks is now too wide. So what do you see here? Well, now you have this different appurtenance here. But you notice that one thing was a straight line now has a bend in it.
So the first one before that was 1,000?
What?
The first one before was 1,000 also?
Yeah.
You said you doubled the samples.
This one has a zero in every other, but inserted between every two samples. This one has every sample replicated twice.
Oh, okay. Same amount of samples.
And you notice in the first one, we have our original spectrum very nicely followed by thing. In the second one,
thing.
We have something that looks almost but not quite like the original sample, but it rolls off, followed by some other thing.
And that 6 dB higher?
It's higher.
Yeah. It's got more energy, yeah.
Because you don't have all those zeros.
Yeah, right. I normalized out the energy anyhow just for printing. But the point is, I normalized out the energy in the plot. Don't worry about it. But the point is it looks sort of like you got rid of some of this appurtenance here. But you notice you put a roll off in the main signal, so you're going to have to fix that, aren't you? So what's
this frequency up at the top there?
That what's
your oddness here?
That's above frequency? That's above 22.5 and below 44.
So there's blocks 20. This is 20 to 20.
Yeah.
And then you got the additional. Yeah. Well,
and then you have this. Now this second thing here. This is a log scale. Is exactly the same spectrum reversed, but since this is a log scale, it doesn't look straight because it's increasing. So in fact, yes, it is the mirrored first spectrum.
That's good.
That's why when I'm looking for aliasing,
yeah,
I always use linear frequency because
yes,
if you're doing EQ, you want
yeah,
human
yeah,
log scale. But if you're looking for problems, you do linear.
Yep.
And then
yep.
You'll see mirroring all over the place.
Well, I tried this both ways, and people seem to be more amenable to the log scale. That's
oh, yeah,
why.
For this,
but yeah.
For this,
yeah, but in any case, the point is, that makes something, and that looks like a bad thing.
It does.
This looks like not as bad a thing, but it's actually worse because this one you have to actually correct the signal as well as the alias. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? Well, what happens? You get this other thing. It's the first image. It's a problem. The spectrum is inverted above 22.050, obviously. So doubling the samples gives you another appurtenance up there, all those the imaging, and it also creates frequency shaping. Now, the bad news is that now you have to do two things. You have to get rid of that thing, and you have to take out the frequency shaping. You don't want to do that. And actually, there's another problem that is, actually sounds a little odd, because now, what if you think about it, what you've done is you've doubled everything. You haven't changed the energy of the signal, but you've put half of it, more or less half of it, some amount of it up above the thing you need to filter out. So now the energy of the part you've got downstream is off by a factor of square root of 2. The first one is off by a factor of 2. Now, anybody that's done processing knows it's easier to do a factor of 2 than it is to do a factor of square root of 2, especially since 1 is a bit shift. So what do you do? Well, you do this. You put it in. You put a 0 between every 2 samples. You get the image. You jam it into a filter. Oh, wait, it's a factor too small. That's a problem, right? If you lose 3 dB, 6 dB every time you do it. But what's happening there? Well, when you put a 0 between every 2 samples, the signal is only there half of the time. That reduces the energy by a factor of 2. You also took half of that energy and put it above half of the old sampling rate, so you lost another factor of 2. So conveniently, you lost 2 factors of square root of 2 here, which gives you a factor of 4, which is very easy to fix in energy by multiplying by 2, since energy is amplitude squared. So yes, that generalizes. If you do 2, it works. If you do interpolation by 3, it works. Conveniently generalizes.
It's just like mixer theory.
Yeah.
Half the energy goes up.
Yep, yep, yep.
F
yeah.
down, then you have the image.
Yep, exactly. What's exactly the same thing.
3 dB here, 3 dB.
Yep, yep. And if you do up by 3, it's square root of 3, square root of 3. If you do 4, whatever. The nice thing is that when you do this, you just have to multiply the input samples or the output samples by whatever your interpolation rate is. So that is a 2-to-1 resampler. It's really that simple, yes. Now, how do you do the filtering? Well, you typically use what's called an FIR filter. How many people know what an FIR filter is? Okay, that's a good sign.
Assume we don't.
Okay, well, basically what it says is use a filter that has a constant delay, which means that the phase shift is equal to 2 times pi times f times the time delay of the filter, which means that effectively it's a pure time delay. And you do that, what?
Linear.
Linear phase. Linear phase is pure delay, yes. And the reason you use that is that means that you get no funny stuff going on around half the sampling rate. Now, not everybody agrees with this, and there's some gotchas to filter design, which I will talk about in a minute.
So if we say it's FIR, you want
to... FIR means finite impulse response. It means you do a convolution, like, you know, you use a convolver, basically.
Yeah, and there's IIR.
And then there's IIR, which cannot be constant delay.
It's infinite impulse response.
Infinite, which cannot be constant delay, because if you think about a filter to have constant delay either has to be symmetric or anti-symmetric around the signal. Now, if you have something which has an infinite impulse response, how do you get the first half of it into the signal? Because if it's going to be symmetric, you're going to wait a long time. Now, yes, you can actually do it by reversing the time, waiting until it gets way below your bottom bit. You can do things like that, and then it will be constant delay. But now you notice you're doing it by convolution instead of doing it by an IIR filter, so...
When you say constant delay, is that of all frequencies?
Yes.
That they're all delayed the same?
All frequencies are delayed by exactly the same amount of time.
Which is a good thing if you want to actually listen to something not smeared.
Yeah.
Just the best you can do.
Yeah.
Phase-wise.
Yeah. It means that the relative phase shift from one frequency to another is zero.
But it adds latency.
It adds latency. Yes. IIRs do not add latency. But they will have whopping phase shift around the knee in the response, and they have to because the phase shift and the amplitude are directly related. So there's no win in that. So filter, well, there's lots of ways to design filters. So what do you want? You want a filter This starts to roll off after 20 kilohertz, which is your passband. You want it to stop rolling off before the first image happens, which is the sampling rate minus your bandwidth. So that basically just tells you what your filter is. That's a pretty steep filter. And notice this, I put this in red for a reason. This is one of those problems with half-band filters. You may have stuff that you don't expect. If you find that, say for instance, your A to D has a half-band filter, you don't want to roll off between 20K and 44.1 minus 20. You want to roll off between 20K and FS over 2. Otherwise, you will get tones at half the sampling rate, which tends to upset your amplifier, your tweeters, and everything else that comes on down. Well, if you use these tweeters, it won't upset them, but if there's a dog outside, he'll probably start running away. So you don't really want that kind of thing. And there are a lot of systems. I have done, if any of you guys that were at the last talk I did over at DigiPen saw that some of the, I measured a bunch of things, and you saw a lot of the things I measured were maybe down 6 dB at half the sampling rate, which is a half-band filter. Now, half-band filter has an advantage. Every other tap is zero. That's the good news. The bad news is that means that because of the way the aliases add up, you never get any rejection whatsoever at half the sampling rate. You get zero rejection, because what happens is you get your minus 6 dB from the positive image, your minus 6 dB in the negative image, which is inverted. However, because you wrapped around the unit circle, it's inverted again. Oh, look, they added together. You get zero reduction in energy. And it's only exactly at half the sampling frequency. It doesn't work anywhere else. It gives you this mathematical effect, which is, well, if you look for Ingrid Debashi's regularity theorem, I wish you luck. I've read it. I said, I know you're a good mathematician, I believe it, but I just described the spectral effect. It will give you a splitting headache because it's written by a couple of world-class mathematicians. And it's not obvious, but don't use half-band filters, damn it. And people do, all over the place.
I've been looking at a lot of HD audio at different sample rates.
Yeah.
I notice some of the material, if you look at the frequency spectrum, it goes in a straight line right towards Nyquist.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even start to dip. And I'm assuming that's a bad sign.
Yeah, it's not a good sign because it means that, for instance, if you're doing SRC on it, you better use something that doesn't use half-band filters. Now, we've seen some SRCs. One of the ones that Bob has, it's a really high-quality SRC, starts rolling off about 0.99999. I mean, it's got a really steep roll-off and a really, really long impulse response, which means a long latency, which, of course, if you're doing it in the workstation, you can back out. But, you know, I wouldn't want to use those for live sound because you might say hello, and about a quarter of a second later, coming out of the speakers, you hear, hello. I mean, so it has, you know, this is one of these things. If you want to have a certain rejection inside of a certain, you know, inside of a certain frequency space, if you call that the frequency resolution, you know, the frequency resolution times the time resolution is greater than or equal to 1. It's not, you know, like it's basically the Fourier version of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. So if you want to roll off in 1 hertz, your filter is going to be at least actually 2 seconds long with a 1 second delay. Lots of good, you know, lots of luck using that in a live sound. That would
so you're saying if you have enough processing time, it is possible to have a spectrum that looks like it goes all the way.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, it is possible to do that. There should be a notch right at half the sampling rate, though. Mm-hmm. If there isn't, then you're going to hit the regularity theorem and
there's any energy up there.
Well, it's hard to have no energy up there. And it could be not that much energy to begin with, but you'll never get rid of it is the point. And if you fold down by 2, that comes right down. Oh,
so just a couple bits worth. Would you hear it?
Well, yeah. What happens is if you do that, like when an A to D's, you start off at 128, and you downsample by 4, and you downsample by 4. But each time you think about it, that stays up at Nyquist and doesn't go away, but it also goes all the way to DC. Mm-hmm. But what happens is every time you do the resampling, when you go down by 4, you add an opposite sign. So now you start seeing DC patterning, and you start seeing tones at a quarter of the sampling rate and an eighth of the sampling rate, and a 1/16 of the sampling rate. And
but the amplitude stays the same.
The amplitude never changes, is the point. Even though you would like it to go away, and you keep throwing that down to DC. And now what happens is DC gets tossed back up to Nyquist, the next step. You know, it's just not a good practice. You get some really strange things happening.
But you can get rid of DC at every step of the way.
But the point is, it's not really DC is the problem. It's almost DC. And if you try to do an IR filter to get rid of DC at 384 kilohertz, you need about 70 bits of mantissa.
Okay. So it doesn't have to be real time, no sweat.
Well, if you want to do, you know, 16, you know, instead of double precision, do 16 precision, yeah, you can probably do it. But, you know, it's much easier to just use a little more processing and do it right in the first place. Isn't it funny how that works? Do it right in the first place is a good thing.
If you have a big enough DSP.
Yeah, well.
DSPs like the TMS.
You mean?
Which,
oh, you mean?
256-bit mantissas.
Yeah, but that's what you need.
But the problem is.
And actually, that isn't even enough. For some, if you try to do something, this I remember many years ago, I was talking to some people about working on the professional version of SACD. What do you I forget what you call it.
Super audio.
Yeah, but what's the professional version? DSD. DSD. Yeah, DSD. They wanted to do processing at DSD rate.
Oh, single bit.
No, that's four. Is it four? I think it's multi-bit, but a small number of multi-bit. And I sat down and did a little calculation. You need about 600 bits of mantissa.
Yeah, just go to 1,000.
So with that particular part, you'd stack four of them.
Yeah.
Because that gave you 1024.
Yep. Well, you have to do the, don't forget though, but if you do double the 256, you actually have to do four operations. So you'd have to do 16 operations, actually.
Yeah, well, that particular processor type, you could actually stack up to eight of them. To build very wide word DSPs. They were used in nuclear instrumentation in the 1980s.
We'll let you just figure it out how to do it right.
Well, the answer is then you just use eight of them running in parallel. That works for me, but I don't want to pay for it. I'd rather just do the filter right in the first place. So, this is a different talk, but there is stuff out there. There are a lot of DSPs with missing codes. There are a lot of tracks that aren't properly anti-aliased. There are a lot of tracks with tons of clipping. You remember, were you at the last talk I did at DigiPen?
I was out of town.
Oh. Who was at the last talk I did at DigiPen? You remember those pictures I put up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's on the net. You can tell them the URL, right?
It's on our website.
Oh, it's on the website. You can actually go watch it if you want. And there's some pictures of some CDs out there that just, well.
Like the Telarc 1812 Overture.
The Telarc is not too bad.
Yes. Yeah, it sounds great, but, yeah, but it's clipped to beat the band.
Well, you have to clip guns, I mean. I mean, that 3x overpressure that hits the microphone.
It doesn't bother me. I wasn't there for the real one. So.
See, that's the whole point.
The real
one. Yeah, but it's hard to describe 3x overpressure inside of 16 bits, really. So some of the clipping is terrible. There's some terrible stuff out there. So with that, I think. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about filtering after the first break, if that's okay. Because we've hit about 45 minutes, and I guess people would like to take a little bit of a break. So, 5-minute break. What?
Good.
5-minute break, 10-minute break.